bizbah li modi. Kemmel darba nisimaw xaw sabiħ Malta. Akbir ta' turisti jifaħru x-xemx u l-baħar, ma spiss jgħidu l-istorja ta' Malta tiġi l-ewwel. Bosta jaqblu li jekk għandna xi ħaġa tassew sabiħa, ili modi. Kemm hu minnu li l-isbaħ ta' Malta u li modi. L-isbaħ li modi. Għalda boħra ċaċċu rapora, il-mikrofonu inselmilkom. Il-programm tal-lum, il-mistieden tal-lum, huwa ftit differenti minn tas-soltu fis-sens li huwa direttur eżekuttiv ta' organizzazzjoni f'Malta, Fondazzjon di Malta, illi forsi ftit mis-semija tagħna ikunu konxi tagħha u tax-xogħol li qed tagħmel. U għalhekk ipprofettajna ruħna minn din is-sensiela nisbaħ li modi għaliex il-paraguni joħorġu waħedhom fix-xogħol li tagħmel dina il-fondazzjoni, fondazzjoni kif jisima The Malt, Maltija, imma li ġiet ispirata barra minn Malta, fi Franza, kif jinstema l-irsien. Ħadd l-okkażjoni li nistieden lil David Rafel Busuttil, li huwa d-direttur eżekattiv tal-Fondazzjoni The Malt, u fl-istess ħin huwa wkoll il-President tal-Alliance Française f'Malta, li din is-sena qed tiċċelebra il-50 sena mit-twaqqif tagħha fl-1959 u għalhekk medda ta' snin meta ħafna mhux biss mis-semija tagħna imma ħafna oħrajn Maltin u Awċin attendow xi kors xi darba l-Alliance Française jew għall-inqas mar jaraw film jew għall-inqas semgħu f'xi attività tagħhom. Jiena kif wieħed jippretendi assoċjat ħafna ma' dina l-għaqda l-Alliance Française u għalhekk inkun naf mill-qrib l-attivitajiet tagħha u prattikament anki għall-inqas daw l-aħħar 40 sena. Imma l-okkażjoni li ġabitna viċin il-mistieden tagħna tal-lum hija differenti. Nerġa' ngħid David Rafel Busuttil għandu sfond differenti huwa Malti Franċiż u fl-istess ħin illum se nagħmlu l-intervista bl-Ingliż għaliex iħossu iktar konfidenti f'dik il-lingwa. Li wieħed jista' jifhimha iktar għax l-Ingliż iktar imxerretha u Malta. Imma l-okkażjoni ġejja minn pubblikazzjoni ta' ktieb li l-professur Alain Blondi ħareġ u din id-darba il-pubblikaturi huma Fondazzjon di Malt u għalhekk il-konnessjoni li jismu The Commerce of Oranges in the 18th Century, Court Fragrance, Royal Greed. Istorja hija immensament interessanti. Jiena meta ħareġ iktieb oriġinali bil-Franċiż, il-professur Alain Blondi kien mistieden f'sensiela oħra li kellna qabel di. U għalhekk fuq il-ktieb innifsu isna tkellimna mal-professur li kien Gian Gentili li huwa kontattilkom joqgħod nofs is-sena Malta, nofs is-sena Pariġi u kemm għandu it-tagħlim tiegħu l-Università ta' Malta u l-Università ta' Sorbonne. Imma il-ktieb bl-Ingliż jirrakkonta l-istess ħaġa kif jirrakkonta bil-Franċiż u għalhekk darba għażilt nistieden differenti, jirrakkonta l-istorja tal-Larinġa Maltija. Il-Larinġa Maltija, Franza u fil-pajjiżi kollha li jitkellmu bil-Franċiż bħal Lussemburgu, bħal il-Belġu jew inkella pajjiżi oħra, jafuha bħala Maltez. Jiġifieri meta jgħidu Maltez, kif ngħidu għal waħda Maltija, huma qed jifhmu l-Larinġa Maltija tad-demm Maltija sabiħa. Imma il-kurzita kif hawn forsi min jaf il-dina il-Larinġa li meta tasal Pariġi jiena niftakarni meta nkun għaddej f'xi triq narhom li waslet qed arrivi tiswa ftit aktar sewwa mill-oħrajn hija xi ħaġa iktar distinta, xi ħaġa iktar sabiħa, ma tiġix minn Malta, dik forsi hija li jiddispjaċina llu, mhux għal raġunijiet ekonomiċi biss imma kien rabta tagħna. Imma oriġinat minn Malta, ħaduha il-Maltin li marru Tunes u għalhekk dawk baqgħu kabru il-Larinġ sabiħ ta' Malta anke aħna, imma aħna ma rbatuhx Franza, imma dawk baqgħu kabruhom meta l-Franċiżi daħlu fil-kolonji tagħhom fosthom Tunes, l-Alġerija, allura il-Maltez kienet magħrufa ma' kulħadd bħala Larinġa bnina tajba li tista' ittellaħħa Pariġi. Imma hemm storja sħiħa fl-intervista li ġejja u għalhekk bosta ngħidilkom kollox. Barra minn hekk ma' David Rafel Busuttil se nitkellmu wkoll fuq ix-xogħol tiegħu fl-Alleanz fuq l-attivitajiet speċjali għal 50 sena ta' dina l-għaqda fostna f'Malta, l-għaqda kulturali kbira li tinsab fid-dinja kollha, imma ovvjament anki Malta, u fl-istess waqt ukoll nieħdu l-opportunità bħala bniedem li huwa assoċjat ħafna ma' Franza biex jgħidilna wkoll x'jaħsbu l-Franċiżi fuq il-Maltin peress li huwa jkollu PPL differenti tiegħu u jista' jagħmel dan il-paragun. Naf ċert li intom se tieħdu gost din l-intervista bħal ma ħadd gost nagħmlilu jiena u għalhekk nittama li segwa mill-bidu sal-aħħar għax lej l-aħħar hemm ħafna opinjonijiet interessanti fuq Malta illum anki fi ħdan l-Unjoni Ewropea u fil-Mediterran. U għalhekk għandha tkun interessanti minn ħafna aspetti. Ejja niltaqgħu ma' David Rafel Buzutti. As mentioned at the start of the program, today we are meeting David Buzutti, David Rafel Buzutti, I should say, because I know that some of your colleagues, friends, and other people who have heard about your work know you. David Buzutti, as I explained also at the introduction of this program today, is a new voice for Campus FM and for Lisbon Limoudi. But he is not new to other organizations or institutions. He is executive director of Fondation de Malte, and he is also, as from this year, 2009, president of the Alliance Française, which this year is celebrating 50 years of Fondation, of another Fondation, and this time its foundation. Let's start with you, if you don't mind, Dave. I know we are also speaking English right now for a specific reason, but I also know that your French is excellent. So that must have some kind of particular reason.
First and foremost, I'd like to say hello to the listeners. I'd like to thank you, Charles, for inviting me here today. I will be talking in English, first and foremost, because my Maltese, although I would like it to be better, it's the fourth language I learnt, and quite late in life. I had the luck of being born in Paris and following a French education, so French is actually my first language.
There you are. No wonder.
No wonder. I did my studies in France, then continued in Malta, and went back to finalize my studies at the Sorbonne. So it was back to France again.
Exactly.
So the French connection was a continuous
strong
one.
Yes, and quite strong, I must say.
Very strong.
And as a Maltese, it's interesting to have this lively connection in your life from inception, so to speak, because you were born also in Paris. How do you feel about it? Because when you come to Malta, you must have wondered sometimes, why is this lukewarm feeling about the French in Malta historically? Now it's much less, thank God. But you must have felt it. And at some time, or it must have been transmitted to you from certain quarters. And you might have wondered, because after all, you're French and Maltese.
You're actually very correct on that. I sensed it, to be fair. At school in Malta, you start immediately getting little peaks, you know, and needling. And I think maybe that's also one of the reasons why I was directed to studying history, particularly social history, in a search for, you know, a discovery of one's roots, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And that did come across, this sort of this French, not antagonism, but there is one feels a certain...
We seem not to forget very quickly, which surprises me, because we forgot and forgave the Italians and the Germans for the Second World War, which was, you know, much nearer to us than 200 years ago with Napoleon. So
I wonder sometimes if there wasn't a bit of British influence or British propaganda on this which helped along the way.
I suspect that too, but I am subjective on that subject, so let's stop there on this. Your explanation would suffice. Fondation de Malte, you are executive director of Fondation de Malte. Now, Fondation de Malte is very strongly present internationally, but what does it stand for, and what are its objectives, its missions? What does it do today, and why Malta is having a Fondation?
Fondation de Malte started in 1998 through the inspiration of my late mother, who was a francophone and a francophile, and wanted to, but we saw there was a niche where things were not being done between Malta and France and could be improved in cultural collaboration, on the environment, and on human rights. In fact, I would say those are the three columns of the Fondation de Malte.
Okay.
We are now entering in our 11th year. And we mainly look at publications, therefore, that is one medium of moving forward, conferences, seminars. We are also very much on close collaboration with a number of important international organizations. We function with the Fundação Mário Soares, which is the foremost NGO in Portugal, which was founded by His Excellency Dr. Mário Soares, ex-president and prime minister of Portugal. We are also the secretariat, and this comes under intercultural dialogue, for the Encuentros de Monásticos de Orientes, which is a meeting place for the churches of the East with the churches of the West. In line, and this we work with the Vatican. So that is very, you know, cultural oriented.
Very wide network, so to speak, as well.
And Malta, and therefore the link with Malta, is that Malta remains a very good place for these type of meetings. Because we are small, neutral, but we have a long history, in which I'd say many Mediterranean and European partners find roots.
It really finds a place there. And once you mentioned, obviously, France and Malta and your late mother, then I think we have to say that your father is Professor Salvino Busutti, quite a huge fame in international affairs, but also one must say as well that he was ambassador to France for quite a number of years, right?
Correct.
And not very long ago, so to speak. So
for 6 years.
Exactly. So people can put you well in your niche now, which is much better when they listen to your voice. Now, you mentioned that the Fondation de Malte has also one of its scopes in its mission statement, the publications, which would be of interest to the Maltese and to the French. And one of that has just now has happened, because there is a publication, a beautiful publication, I must say, by Professor Alain Blondy. Now it is in English, but originally it was in French, and it's called The Commerce of Oranges in the 18th Century. Now, that is a very, very interesting subject, a piece of research by Professor Blondy, mostly in Malta, but also in Paris and in other places. And after having been published in French, now it is in English. So I would ask you, because I had interviewed Professor Blondy when the publication in French was issued, so we don't have to go into details about the book that much. But for the sake of people who missed that interview some years ago, maybe one or two, one should say something about the famous Maltese, which is a famous orange that goes to France, but not from Malta. Maybe you can explain.
Not from Malta. Well, the original, as you said, was in French and came out about 5 to 6 years ago. When it came out, we were actually surprised by the amount of requests for an English version. And we set about to start getting to go forward on a translation. It was an unusual translation for two reasons. Firstly, being a historical translation, in which there has to be a certain correctness with the original version. We can't be too liberal with the translation, and we should not correct if there is bad sentences. We have to keep to the bad sentences.
Especially being a historical document of this magnitude.
And it was, of course, 18th century French, and we had to translate as much as possible into 18th century English. And I can assure you there were some words which were absolutely impossible to find. We had to go through dictionaries. Very old style, extremely interesting.
So it was a big task on its own, so to speak, the translation.
The translation on its own, and you know, really, we have to thank the translator, Ms. Alina Darmanin, who's also the coordinator of the Fondation de Malte, for, I would say, a very painstaking task.
But the result is
extremely good.
Very good.
What is we also, I think, is very interesting, you know, as a historian, and now there is a bigger focus internationally on social history, is having all this research on a fruit, on the orange. Contrary to what many people would would actually believe at first, the orange that existed until the 16th century was a bitter orange, was a garden orange, for perfume mainly, mm-hmm. not an edible one.
That's interesting, for perfume.
For perfume. The scents, hence in the Arab culture as mm-hmm. well, mm-hmm. which obviously perpetrated yeah. in Sicily, in Malta.
They still smell good, so oh, to speak, oranges until this day. But you wouldn't imagine that it wasn't a fruit to be eaten, but
it was bitter.
To use it for perfume.
And it was only thanks to the Portuguese explorers who brought it back to them from China. They brought back this sweet variety, mm-hmm. which they eventually introduced in Portugal and in Malta. So much so that the word orange in Arabic is still called Portugal, Portugal. And in Malta, because we had three Portuguese grandmasters, but two were notoriously powerful grandmasters, introduced the oranges, the sweet version. And thanks to the presence of the knights, suddenly, you know, there was this whole, what could say, fashion mm-hmm. for the oranges. And from Malta, it reached the royal courts.
That's right.
And by the time we had the 17th to the 18th century, the center was Versailles, because, of course, a large number of the knights were also connected to France.
Yes.
And you had an unusual situation of a luxury trade good based in Malta at its core.
Hence the orange gardens.
Hence the orange gardens.
In Malta, like Attard, which is full of them, Sinjewi.
And one particular one, because it's the same, apparently the same tree, in Casa Leone in Santa Venera. Those seem to be original trees planted at the time, apparently.
Other oranges or orange trees descended from the originals have found their way to Tunisia, am I right?
Then, in the 19th century, when France took over Tunisia, and also Maltese went to Tunisia, let's not forget the large immigration of the 19th century. It is quite clear that they took with them, so they took goats, they also took with them fruits. And the orange was one important fruit. The French, particularly in the idea of colonizing Tunisia, and found good breeding space for these trees, planted. And you had a variant, what I think we would call today more blood oranges, but are referred to in France and in Tunisia as Maltese.
There you are.
And to this day, you'll go to any market yes, in the French yes. language, French-speaking country, and you find l'orange maltese.
Exactly. And they awaited for them, you know, await them in Paris every season, every year.
At a high cost.
It's still almost a delicacy. I mean, we must not exaggerate, but it's still regarded as something really nice.
It's regarded as being very nice, and also having a lot of nutritive properties.
Yeah.
Which is
the blood association, even in Malta, I mean, for many years, even when we were kids, you know, you take a blood orange because it helps your blood circulation or whatever. So the association is very strong. This book now tells the whole story. It's also, we might say just this and then move on to something else, but it seems also that it took a priest to do a lot of good communication and also intercommunication between royalty in France, Marie Antoinette in particular, in this 18th century, and Malta, right? I mean, it put Malta on the map in France.
I think what is particularly interesting in the book is you have two stories. There is a father and son relationship mm-hmm. between the author of the letters to his father and his father in Paris. Savoy Senior writing to Savoy Junior. Mm-hmm. And since actually, these ideas preceding the French Revolution, it gives an insight, first and foremost, to Parisian society mm-hmm. living in this luxury
yeah.
all the way up to 1788, right. 1 year before the revolution. But on the other hand, also Maltese society, mm-hmm. a lot of insights, particular geographic locations, and workmanship. For example, how to pack the orange, you know, a long process
yeah.
in constructing the boxes, and you get this insight on social Malta.
That's right. It's a kind of cultural history of both countries, mostly of Malta, because we don't have too much during this century, except for the formal archives
exactly.
Of the knights. But also life in Paris, as you point out so well, just before the French Revolution, and perhaps the foie gras of Marie Antoinette and royalty.
Yeah, the Versailles, the princesses,
yes.
And I have to say that Professor Blondy, particularly his research on the French side, builds up all the genealogy yes. very beautifully with a lot of interesting yes. and true anecdotes.
Yes, and the care through which Marie Antoinette, for example, and her assistants, obviously, used to insist on getting fresh oranges coming straight to the palace and available immediately before they start sort of drying up. So this it must have been looked at as something very particular.
And I think that's why Professor Blondet, in his original French version, called it gourmandise.
Exactly.
De roi.
Oui.
Royal treat.
Treat. It is a royal treat. And it is a royal treat for us too, because for Malta, it's an honor to have this document printed now also in English. And it is also an honor for the Fondation, which are also the publishers of this book, quite a number of pages, almost 250 pages, with illustrations also in color. So it's something for which Malta is thankful to the Fondation here, something which is reaching its mission. Illum David Rejfel Buzuttili għatmana fl-studio tikellimna dwar il-Fondazzjon de Malt u l-Allianz Franzez li huwa assoċjat fihom fl-ewwel waħda bħala direttur eżekuttiv fit-tieni waħda bħala president. U għalhekk se jgħidilna ħafna fuq dawn l-assoċjazzjonijiet fuq il-pubblikazzjoni partikolari tal-lum dwar l-istorja tal-Arinġ f'Malta bl-Ingliż u fl-aħħar mill-aħħar fuq l-Assoċjazzjoni ta' Malta ma' Franza. Komplu semgħu l-isbaħ li mod. Another hat which you might be wearing is, and which you are wearing now, is the presidency of the Alliance Française. And that is news for a lot of people, because I think the Alliance, so far, I am also in the committee in the Alliance, and therefore I know from a certain close distance, that the new committee has not yet been formally announced to the public. So in a way, this is part news. The new presidency, what are the objectives of the presidency? I mean, the Alliance is 50 years strong, and thank God for that, because it has done a lot of good work. But with a new committee, obviously you always get some added objectives. Besides celebrating the 50 years of the Alliance in 2009, what would you, as president of the Alliance now, see as its immediate and maybe not so immediate objectives?
I think, firstly, the Alliance Française has now been renamed Alliance Française de Malte Méditerranée, which in itself shows the large objectives the Alliance Française in Malta is giving to itself. We are celebrating 50 years. There are a lot of Alliance Française in the world. Mm. And just take in Italy, there are over 20. Yeah. But internationally, I think about 22 only have reached 50 years. So the one in Malta is quite historical. It's quite a historical event.
Yeah, I would say so.
Now, the Alliance Française's two main columns are language and culture. Mm-hmm. For language, we have begun, as of this year, specially certified courses, the DALF and the DELF, which allow, which are valid as university credits, so even if you are a 16-year-old, 14-year-old, you can do your certificate now, and these will count as extracurricular credits once you go to university.
That's good.
In the whole of Europe, so it is not limited.
Yeah, similar locally to the baccalaureate, in a way, or part of.
Part of. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is something we are actively starting. We have started with an Alliance Française in Gozo, mm-hmm. therefore.
It's something new.
Something new.
And it seems to be quite active immediately.
It has been quite...
born on the active side.
Incredibly so. I mean, beyond any expectation. We did not imagine such a start. We're also working with the local councils of Malta and Gozo to have decentralized courses in the local councils.
That means that courses could be now followed in different villages and not necessarily in the Alliance Française headquarters in Floriana.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we have to thank, you know, the various mayors who are collaborating on this project. Yeah. We have also, and this is quite novel as well, started conversation classes in Valletta at lunchtime hours.
And where is that?
This will be, again, with the Valletta Local Council, uh-huh. who have been very helpful on this initiative, because we have found that many people, particularly adults, and this is aimed at adults in particular, don't have time in the afternoon or after work. You know, usually the children who they have other errands. The lunchtime break seems to
nicely filled in. Yes,
that's it.
So, and they do, allow me to interrupt you just a minute, but I do come across a lot of adults who love French, French culture, and also, you know, have a good command of the French language. Not extremely good, but a good command. And they would all, normally, they all ask me, but why doesn't the Alliance do more, you know, courses for practical usage, like learning more how to speak, keep up a conversation, whether it's social, business, or whatever. Now, the Alliance has been doing this for some time, but does it mean that now the Alliance is planning to go out on this as well?
We're going to see how this goes with Valletta and, let's say, tune things according to the demand. But from what I am understanding, and the results we're already seeing, there seems to be a demand. Now we'll see how we can fill this demand, not just necessarily in Valletta, because there are other localities in Malta where this could easily function. Yeah. Our main, I think, not problem, but it's a question of finding the right location and the right way of functioning.
Yes.
But we do want to expand on this, and I would say the next couple of years will be expanding in this direction of decentralized education, and that will be from the linguistic, for the language, the teaching of the French language. On the other hand, on culture, this year we have a lot of activities planned for the 50 years. We're going to be having literally one a month, at least, plus in some cases two to three things a month, going from concerts. We're having a ballet at the end of this month.
Celebrating the 50th anniversary.
Celebrating the 50th anniversary. Mm-hmm. But, of course, being a celebration, you know, this is more of a one-off year.
Yeah.
We would like to see, I think, over the next few years, a more consistent presence of French culture, be it cinema, be it plays.
Mm-hmm. Plays even in Maltese. Translated from French, for example, that is which we lack a lot.
Because exactly, you know, culture is not limited to the language.
That's right.
Language is only one of the conveyors of culture. Mm-hmm. Introducing French plays does not necessarily mean introducing with the French language.
Exactly.
Then we could be doing some in the French language as well. Mm-hmm. But I think there is a lot of potential, and I believe many people actually do not know this aspect of French culture. You realize that they are not aware of it.
They might, exactly, this is the proper expression, because they are not aware of it. Obviously, we know that France boasts of the most famous playwrights in the world. Maybe I'm exaggerating a bit, but amongst the best famous playwrights in the world that influenced other playwrights all over the world. But many Maltese never study them, especially at school level, and only the few, the handful of French teachers that carry on with their studies at university level get access to them. The rest, we don't find French books on sale as much as we would like, and maybe it's a bit challenging to find French books. But also there are translations in English, and there are a lot. We don't seem to find a lot because there is no demand for them. Hence, nobody knows about them, or very few.
You're extremely correct on that point. Mm. Extremely correct. And I would not limit it only to the famous playwright. I mean, you have, in Paris alone, every week there are 190 theatre pieces, of which two-thirds are modern.
Exactly. Today's.
Today's. So it need not look, too far.
Sure.
One can look at the present and see a lot of modern.
That's right.
Maybe more fun for some people, but there is a lot going on, a lot of creativity. We talk about creativity so much.
Yeah,
I think there's a lot to be done.
Mentioning playwrights and authors, obviously, we are lucky this year that the ambassador of France in Malta, I mean, we can't not mention him, is Daniel Rondeau, who is an author. And in fact, he's quite a popular author, especially when it comes to studies of Camus, Sartre, etc. In fact, this week, when we are transmitting this program, which is April 2009, there is a conference by various different authors, but he himself has a particular evening on Camus. As president of the Alliance Française, do you find this as a big help, having such a cultured, within quotes, person as ambassador?
I think we are extremely privileged to have His Excellency Daniel Rondeau as Ambassador of France to Malta. He is famous not only for his writings on Sartre and Camus, he's famous for his writings on the Mediterranean, on Mediterranean countries, and has quite a following, quite a following. He is also known as a biographer d'Estaing back in France. So he's been the biographer of a number of actors.
I see.
And he has put culture, you know, and cultural activities as his forte. Yes. And we are benefiting from this presence. We also have to say benefiting by the very energetic new director of the Alliance Française, yes, who is also has a double function because he's also conseiller culturel for the Ambassade de France.
And I'm hoping to have him invited here in the coming weeks, Serge Borg.
Mr. Serge Borg.
Borg, because he happens to have Maltese origins, like the oranges.
And we have to, I think we are lucky to have these two people at the same time, all the more, to make such an impact in Malta for the French culture.
So there we are wrapping almost the activities of the Alliance Française. I wish to emphasize perhaps, or push more, you mentioned that there are particular and special activities, cultural activities being held in 2009. Can we mention one or two, even without the fine details of date, etc., except for the Ballet de l'Europe, which is in Malta towards the end of April 2009 at the Emmanuel Theatre. So that is very close, and I think ballet lovers would definitely go and see. It's being held with efforts from France, England, as well as Malta, of course.
And that's done with the collaboration of Teatro Manuel and the Dance Council of Malta.
Dance Council. What other activities, cultural activities, do we sort of look forward to?
Well, we'll be having an exhibition starting in May on Paris La Métisse. It's a photographic exhibition which was launched with UNESCO, and this will be running May and June. Mm-hmm. We are also having a number of concerts, one in June and one towards the end of this year. We should be having a couple of book publications, book launches, in celebration of our 50 years.
That means an original publication related to Francophonie, so to speak, in Malta.
In Malta,
right?
Over the last 50 years. Mm. And more than anything, directed at participants in the Francophonie in Malta.
Mm. That's interesting.
And I think, you know, there'll be a few other surprises along the way, which we are all, okay, we are working on, and you know
exactly
very well.
Exactly. But we gave a taste.
We're giving a taste.
And that's very good, because I know that many of our listeners would follow such activities, cultural activities, on more so. We mentioned Francophonie. I mentioned Francophonie a while ago. And in fact, once I have you here, as the president of Alliance Française, but also as a person having been born in Paris, and with your strong connection with Malta, obviously your descendancy or ascendancy rather is Maltese. What about Francophonie in Malta? Now, we mentioned that there is some lukewarm feeling around for France, but Francophonie has been strong. I used to teach French for some time in schools, and I always saw that, and I still follow the figures. I always see the statistics show that there are thousands of Maltese students studying French at secondary level. Mm-hmm. Varies, 13,000, 14,000, but quite a number for Malta, compared to having other options. I mean, Malta is already bilingual, English Maltese, so kids here have to learn those two languages. And then there's Italian, which is so much next door that it is a soft option, and everybody picks it up very quickly from television. So French would be the first next on the list. How could you somehow explain why French, in spite of perhaps untoward feelings, still commands a presence? Would it be tourism, for example? I don't know. I
somehow think that, I think it's a question of perception as well. I think many people still perceive, you know, France still has a status, mm-hmm, La France, exactly. But French way of living, for example, mm-hmm, there is an attraction to France. I think the attraction comes, for many people, I believe, it is actually the attraction of Paris. Mm. I think Paris, in the mental image for many people, is
the romantic
side,
artistic,
there is this pull, yeah, to Paris.
And funnily enough, I think what happens to many people is that once they get to Paris, they're usually disappointed because they meet the Parisians, who in France have a certain reputation themselves
for being like all big capital cities. Because, I mean, if you go to London, you hardly meet the English, so to speak. You know, you go to Vienna, it's another problem. So, in a way, I call them ex-empire capital cities.
That's it.
They have some kind of complex around them.
And I think that many, so there is this attraction, you know, want to go to Paris, want to see France. We, you know, we heard so much about France. You do hear about it. And there is, I think you said very nicely, the romantic pull.
There would be.
Qui perdure, if you know.
Yes.
And at the same time, I think there's a lot of mid-breaking to be done in Mortar, or the mid-building, breaking down certain myths on France, which are still propagated, where, at least when I was in education in Mortar, were propagated in our classes.
They were in the history books. In history books.
Exactly. And erroneously.
Together, yes, erroneously. Besides, also, there is the war perspective, which many people prefer to forget. Malta met France, unfortunately, between two reigns.
And I think we should mention one other thing, maybe also the other attraction of France is French food. And I think the gastronomie française is also another pull factor in people getting introduced to France.
In fact, many female students also study French because they come across it in recipes so often. So in a way, yes, that also has an attraction. What about tourism? I mentioned tourism on purpose. Since the 60s, Malta has also moved very well towards becoming an attraction to tourists. But the bulk always came from English-speaking countries, from England mostly, from the UK. With all this French being learnt in Malta, how come, I don't know, did it help in learning French? Because waiters seem to be proud when they know a few words in French, and they help others along. Now the French are learning English, the younger ones especially. But did French somehow connect with the French tourists?
You know, I don't actually believe so. I have doubts on that, I'll be truthful. Mm-hmm. One, tourism figures from France have always been inconsistent, as opposed to other countries. Mm-hmm. The French themselves are actually quite adventurous tourists, as compared to some other nations. They try to fall in and learn. So they do not expect to always find French, generally.
No. I mean, and they couldn't consider us as a colony here, because they go to Morocco and North Africa and the rest, much more Senegal, than they would come here, obviously.
I think, you see, way beware from a Maltese perspective, and this is where Malta needs some rethinking, is that Malta, in the mind, here we see, coming back to perception, in the mind of many French people, when you say Malta, for them it is the Order of Malta, and not the Republic of Malta.
Very true.
And that distinction, with many French, surprisingly, still, it endures.
Yeah.
It's still there today.
We should use it as a base to arrive at Malta today, maybe.
Correct. But I have to say that for many people, when you mention Malta, l'ordre, the order.
Yes. And it's coming, a federalist part.
That's it. And yes, coming to Malta is coming for the knights. There isn't a conception of the rest of Malta, historical and social.
That's true.
So it's, I think this is where we need to work as Maltese to push Malta as Malta today.
That's right.
To France and other French-speaking nations.
One good vehicle, perhaps, sometimes I think about it, but only last January I was seeing at the Institut Arab, Le Monde Arab, an exhibition about Napoleon and Egypt. And there you can see this same parallel. I mean, the Egyptians did a very good job by attracting the French through Napoleon, but exhibiting only Egypt, practically. I mean, there was nothing new about Napoleon, which we didn't know before, but there was a lot about Egypt, all its history and today, to present to the public. And maybe we need some kind of vehicle in this direction in the coming
years. That was a brilliant exhibition, the one you mentioned.
It was, yes.
There was last year, I think last November, there was an exhibition of Le Glaive. It was at Les Invalides.
Les Invalides of l'Armerie.
Of l'Armerie, that's it. Which that at least gave.
Yes, was modest because it wasn't very big. It has a beautiful catalogue. But again, maybe we didn't exploit the occasion as much as I would have loved.
I think that is the problem. That it was not sufficiently exploited, and you see, even there, it was connected too much with the night.
Almost entirely. Almost entirely. I was there as well. I mean, I've seen it, and it is true. This is why I compared it to Napoleon and Egypt. Because they went on the wagon, whereas we just kept the knights in the exhibition and stopped there. So maybe we have to rethink.
I think we've remained a bit too subservient to the knights, historically.
Looks like we fall in their shadows, because they were too big, perhaps, and maybe it's about time we start reviewing
ourselves.
That is perspective.
That is true. Now I come to a closer theme, and I look at it as Malta and the EU now. Mm-hmm. So Malta spent 200 years almost under the British, and now it's in the EU. But in the EU, one of the founder members of the EU is France. And again, you come across France. The EU, Malta's adhesion to the EU, mean anything new, or does it help to get Malta closer to France, as it was under the Knights, after all, for 300 years?
Apart from France, we must forget that the founding members included Belgium,
yes,
and Luxembourg, which are all French-speaking. So, at the foundation of the European Union, France was 50% of the French language, was 50% of the European Union. Still today, I think we must also remember we're also members of the Eurozone, mm-hmm. which does not include, for example, England. English is not one of the languages of the Eurozone.
Very true.
It's actually more predominantly French, yes. by numbers.
Yes.
However, I am told that the Maltese, because all societies are evolving to a business language of English, Maltese are in demand as being quite cross-cultural, linguistically, mm-hmm. particularly. With the European Union and Malta's position with France, well, I think there are ups and downs to it always. It's interesting to see that, famously, when Sarkozy won his elections as president of France,
he was in Malta.
That's right, the next day.
I think Malta has a role to play, not just for France, but with the other major partners of the European Union, as the southern point, the southern border of the European Union. And I don't mean it in terms of the legal immigration problem, which is a widespread problem, and not just Malta's situation, but I'm talking, for example, in cooperation with extra-European partners, mm-hmm. with our North African partners, with our Middle Eastern partners. That is where I believe the Maltese are strong.
Yeah, because you come halfway.
We come
through between Europe and
between
the
two of them. We are small enough not to be a threat. Mm-hmm. You know, no one's going to think Malta's coming in with any pretensions.
We have position but no size.
Exactly. And I think we could be useful for Europe and help at the same time helping ourselves. So I think the first thing is, well, we're seeing this with the Union for the Mediterranean, where we're going to have one of the setups in Malta. Let us not forget, and this is really, and I have to say, really underline, that the Mediterranean Parliamentary Assembly, PAM, is in Malta. It's the headquarters which brings together all the parliaments of the Mediterranean. Mm. But there's not enough PR on this. I think locally many people forget it. Mm. But that is a very active institution. And because it's Mediterranean, it is not limited to just a European perspective. Mm. So there again, see, Malta, that's where Malta can really have a role to play. There is the EU maritime policy. The EU maritime policy, though a brilliant idea, has lacked from the first day input from the Mediterranean partners on the other side of the shore, not the non-EU shore. And I think Malta should be one of the main interlocutors, because first and foremost, we are in the middle of it, and we can communicate with them.
Yeah, and we have so many common factors. I mean, with the non-EU, we have DNA, language, and a lot of things. And with the EU, we have history. So, I mean, in a way, we're
and
rightly
I think
positioned.
The link with France also is that we are close to Tunisia, mm-hmm. and there's also Algeria. So there's also the old, if you want, the old French colonies. Mm-hmm. Malta's are easier to access.
Mm-hmm. But then, sorry to interrupt, but then you notice that, for example, the French first French Minister of Foreign Affairs took ages to visit Malta after independence, so to speak. It took quite a stretch of time, maybe again, because the British were still here after independence. So in a way that has put them off. How, in fact, it leads me to one of the last questions now. How do you think, because you've lived and studied in Paris, and therefore you can perhaps, you know, for a minute go and look at us from outside. How do you see the French looking at us now? Not historically, as you mentioned, we are Lord de Malte, but now, on the tourist map, on as an EU partner, as a shareholder of the EU, as a bridge to the to North Africa, you know, how do they perceive us, the French?
I'll say one thing. I was impressed when I had returned to Paris to further my studies after having spent some time in Malta. I had been working with a satellite company while studying. It was a very large organization. And I hadn't realized. But we were put in a... I was put in a particle room with other persons who came from Ireland. And it hadn't... I hadn't noticed this immediately. But one of the courses I was doing at the Sorbonne, Paris 4, was under Professor Verger Franceschi, who was Corsican. I had this beautiful course on l'idée des îles, the idea of islands.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I had not realized until then that coming from an island, because I did not realize there was prejudice to people coming from islands. And an island is perceived, and still perceived, as being either exotic or being backwards. So there was prejudice, and the prejudice came not being Malta, but being from an island.
Yeah.
So I think that is the first hurdle that I had to overcome. But I actually was perceived as coming from something else, not the continent. Then the second part was Maltese.
Like an outsider, anyway.
An outsider, no, absolutely. I mean, were people from the Caribbean islands, from Africa? I mean, like, there was no European presence at the time in this organization. I think us having joined the European Union has put us back on the map. Mm. It has put us back on the map.
It's a good plus.
It's an important plus politically. Mm-hmm. I think we need to market ourselves more. But even in terms of legislation, in terms of business, let us not forget that Malta's commercial partners, its first two are France and Germany. It has not been England and Italy for quite some years now. So even from an economic perspective, things have changed with France. I think they have changed more in economic terms than in cultural terms. And we have seen it with a rise in tourism. We have seen it with decentralized travel, coming no longer just from Paris, but from Bordeaux, Lyon, Marseille. So I think we are in for better times.
Okay. One last question, because our time is up. We've been here talking for the last 40 minutes or so, even more. When it comes to the Fondation de Malte, of which we remind our listeners you are executive director, any particular project which is in the pipeline, which is we're working on perhaps?
Well, I'll mention one thing. We have a regular book series called Telos, which is classical Greek for finality, leading to somewhere. And we always try to choose themes d'actualité, you know, and we try to get current affairs with particular input. Mm-hmm. And what I can say is this coming summer, our next edition of Telos is going to be on looking back at 20 years since the fall of the Berlin Wall. Mm-hmm. And we have some very privileged authors, which run from Jean-Pierre Massuet, outgoing from the European Council at Strasbourg, Professor Karel Vasak, who was at UNESCO for many years, and was himself one of the comrades of Havel in the Czech Republic.
Okay.
Professor Bernard Snois, outgoing expert for the Mediterranean at the OSCE.
It's a nice mix.
It will be a nice mix. So this is like one of the activities we're pushing, these regular publications on these themes with the privileged international links we have.
Well, I thank David Rayfield-Buzutil, who I remind our listeners is executive director of Fondation de Malte. We had just finished speaking about it and its new publication now in summer 2009, but also now president of the Alliance Française, which is celebrating its 50th anniversary in Malta this year. Merci bien.
Merci à tous. Thank you.
intervista li jena sibt interessanti ħafna li tagħmel anki intom wasalna fit-tmiem l-edizzjoni tal-lum tal-isbaħ li mogħi. Nittama li aħbarijiet dwar attivitajiet tal-Alleanz Franċeż tibgħu issegwuhom kemm fuq dan l-istazzjoni kif ukoll minn fuq il-medja b'mod ġenerali. Għaliex matul din is-sena hemm ħafna attivitajiet sbieħ li għad jistgħu jinteressawkom. U fl-istess waqt tifakkarkom li l-istorja kollha tal-intervista ħarġet mill-pubblikazzjoni ġdida tal-ktieb tal-professur Alan Blondi, The Homeless of Oranges in the 18th Century, li sewwa bl-Ingliżi u allura naħseb jistgħu jifhmuh ħafna nies iktar, jgħod mal-250 faċċata fih illustrazzjonijiet ġo fih anke bil-kulur huwa pubblikazzjoni tal-Fondazzjon De Malt. Sa kemm niġgħu ta' ġimgħa nieħla minn ħati ħaċċa xwira, insemmi.